Hello and welcome to Moving Kentucky Forward. I'm Bruce Maples, publisher of Forward Kentucky. One of the most important elections in our state this year is the race for 3rd District Congressperson in Louisville. We interviewed Representative Attica Scott some time ago and really appreciated her taking the time to speak with us. Now today we're interviewing Senator Morgan McGarvey, who is running also for that seat. We asked Senator McGarvey how his campaign is going, how he is reaching out to various groups in Louisville, and what he wants to be known for if he gets to go to Washington. It was a really broad-ranging interview, and I really appreciate his time. Let's listen to what Senator Morgan McGarvey has to say about running for Congress. So I'm here talking with Senator Morgan McGarvey, who is the minority leader in the state Senate, but for today, he is a candidate for U.S. Congress in Kentucky's 3rd District. Senator McGarvey, welcome to Moving Kentucky Forward.
Hey, thanks, Bruce. It's great to be back. And first time here in this capacity.
Yes. We've had you on multiple times talking about the state Senate, but that's not our focus today. So you're running to take Congressman John Yarmuth's place. He recently endorsed you. I've been getting various emails from your staff about this endorsement and that endorsement. So from the outside, it looks like this campaign is rocking and rolling. How does it look from the inside?
You know, thanks. I mean, I feel like we really have some good momentum going for the campaign. I can tell you as a candidate, though, campaigns are nerve-wracking every single day, but it's been a roller coaster. You know, I woke up on October 11th not knowing that John Yarmuth was going to announce that he was going to not run for Congress. And so I say it's like being, you know, shot out of a cannon. He announced he was not going to run for Congress, and then, you know, I kind of immediately started going in. And we've been trying to do what you do on campaigns, which is build support from every person in every corner of the city, from the different groups, you know, who represent, you know, particularly the people I care about, you know, the working families, represent the underrepresented. And so these are groups and people I've worked with for a long time. And so, you know, I'm really excited to have Congressman Yarmuth's endorsement as of this week, but, you know, also to have, you know, the endorsements of organized labor, to have the endorsement of SEIU, the United Auto Workers, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. And it's nice to have the endorsements of some of my colleagues, because these aren't endorsements that just came today. These are people I've worked with for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, and you look at, like, I co-founded the Affordable Housing Caucus in the state legislature. I passed a law that makes it easier to use vacant and abandoned property for good use. And, you know, I've worked with Councilwoman Keisha Dorsey, and she's been a real champion for affordable housing here in Louisville. And so, you know, I'm proud to have her endorsement. You know, I've worked with Cassie Chambers Armstrong on directly with her. She brought one of her clients to the legislature, and we passed a law that protects victims of domestic violence. So I'm proud to have her endorsement, because, you know, these are people with whom I have worked to really get things done for the district. And we've done it. I think, you know, that's an example where we've got really good new young leadership coming up from the city. And so, you know, the campaign, I don't know if you're a candidate, if you can ever say the campaign feels good, but right now it feels like we've got momentum, and we're not letting up. We continue to do what you have to do. And I mean, even yesterday morning, I knocked doors for about, you know, 6 hours, and it was freezing. It was absolutely freezing outside. And I joke, you know, I'm wearing long underwear. I've got two jackets on. I walk up to somebody's door and I look like the kid in A Christmas Story. You know, but people understand this race is important. And I still believe you've got to build those coalitions. You've got to get that support from the city, and you've got to go out and ask voters directly for their support. And that's what we're doing.
So when Congressman Yarmuth announced, as you said, the shot out of a cannon day, when he announced that he was retiring, caught some of us by surprise. But what caught me more by surprise, frankly, was getting an email from you, like, pretty much immediately. It was seemed to me like it was about 15 or 30 minutes. And you had a website more or less ready and some other things. So obviously you've been thinking about this for some time. So when did you actually start thinking about leaving the state Senate and moving on up to Congress? Was that like 2 months ago or a year ago, or has that always been sort of in your mind that you'd like to do that someday?
Yeah. So I want to answer. I want to answer with one word, right? And then elaborate on it if I can, because I don't want this to appear evasive anyway, but it's not a simple answer, right?
Okay.
So when did I start thinking about it? Recently. And I say that I've enjoyed being a legislator. I really like the give and take. I've enjoyed being in the Kentucky legislature. And you got to remember, when I got into the legislature, it was a much different place than it is now.
Yes.
I got elected in 2012. And actually, I love this, Bruce, because you know all things political. If you remember, I got elected and then there was a special election the same day as Election Day. So I actually started serving in 2012, not having to wait until January of 2013 to start serving. Mm-hmm. And the day I was elected to the state Senate, the House had, I think, 58 Democrats. Greg Sumo, Speaker of the House, every statewide constitutional officer in Kentucky, with the exception of the Commissioner of Agriculture, was a Democrat.
Right.
15 Democratic senators. It was a much different place. And so now that's completely flipped on its head. There are 75 Republicans in the House of Representatives.
Yep.
There are only 8 Democrats in the state Senate, and every statewide office holder is a Republican, with the exception of Governor Beshear. And so the ability to get as much done has decreased somewhat. And then as I work on these things, and I work hard to make positive change every time I'm up there, and then fight against the things we don't think are positive change. I see a federal response needed for a lot.
Mm.
So whether it is guaranteeing every child access to a public preschool option or affordable childcare for parents, whether it's getting healthcare to everybody, whether it's tackling the immediate threat that is climate change, we can and should do that on the state and local level. But I really believe that the best response is coming out of the federal government for that. And so that's what got me interested in it. I would say, I've thought about it off and on, but, you know, Congressman Yarmuth does a great job.
Mm-hmm.
I did not think he would be leaving this quickly, but I would say I would think about it more after the 2020 elections, and fully believing he was going to run again in 2022. And, you know, he announced he was out, but it's something I had thought about a little bit. So when he got out, I knew that was a decision I had to make quickly. And mm-hmm. I either get in or not. And that's how I viewed running for office. First time when I ran for office, again, you remember, I ran because the Supreme Court threw out the legislative maps. They gave everybody 3 days to decide whether to run for office.
Right.
And I tell people all the time, if I'd had a fourth day, I might not have done it. And so, you know, you've got to make that decision. You've got to make that commitment. You've got to get in. And then where I benefited a little bit is from being in office. I had a reporter text me and say, how did you get a logo so quickly? And if you've ever worked in a campaign, you know that logos can be one of the most excruciating things you have to work on and do. And it goes through draft and draft and family member, and then your mom doesn't like it, and your neighbor doesn't like this one. You know, I just said, hey, we just changed for state Senate to for Congress. Right. We've had the logo. MorganMcGarvey.com has been my website for over 10 years.
Right.
And so, you know, a lot of that kind of, we had an email list that you were already on. A lot of that infrastructure was already there. Now, the congressional campaign had to pay for that, right? You know, so the email list that I accumulated state Senate, they paid for. But, you know, we were able to get kind of up and running. And again, it's been shot out of a cannon since then, but a really positive and affirming experience with a lot of support from all over the county. We're running hard. And I think the goal of this and the goal of Democrats in Kentucky should be, and will continue to be, we've got to keep this seat in Democratic hands. Let's keep the House in Democratic hands. And to do that, we got to keep this seat in Democratic hands, because not only is this Louisville's congressman, and Louisville deserves to continue, I stress to continue, to have a proven and effective member of Congress. This is Kentucky's Democratic member of Congress. And serving in the state legislature has given me a real window into looking at that, the importance. of making sure that we do have a Democratic voice in Washington, that we do have a Democratic voice in Washington that can help throughout the state, that can help recruit candidates into legislative races or into council races across the state as we continue to grow our own bench and our own farm team for the future here in Kentucky.
So were you surprised that they didn't mess with the third district in the redistricting, or did you expect it to get left alone?
Yeah, this was one where I won't go so far as to say I was surprised. I mean, I've been working on this long before I knew John Yarmuth wasn't going to run. In fact, I worked on it some with John Yarmuth. And how do we keep the third Democratic? But there were very much two schools of thought in Frankfort. You know, one school of thought is split the third district up. And to do that, you're probably splitting the third district in, Jefferson County. You know, when I say the third district, I'm picturing the map of Jefferson County because I've looked at these maps so long, right? You're splitting Jefferson County into three congressional districts or four congressional districts. Mm-hmm. Right now, Jefferson County is necessarily split into two congressional districts. I don't think people realize that. Jefferson County itself has too much population to just have one congressional district for the entirety of the county.
Right. It's
already split. Once a district is split, that's when the rules get a little bit crazy. And the courts so far have said, when you have to split a district, you can split it a bunch of different ways. And so a lot of the Republicans in Frankfort said, let's make it so we take a huge chunk of Louisville, put it most likely in the second congressional district, which is to the west of us, take the third congressional district, keep it the center of Louisville, and take it down and probably in and around some of what I call the collar counties, the counties surrounding Jefferson County, mm-hmm. Bull, Spencer, Shelby, right? That kind of area. You've still got to pick up a lot of population to do that. All of these, congressional districts are around 750,000 people, and then take the eastern part of the county and likely put it up into the fourth district. You might be able to bring the sixth district in if they'd really wanted to, but I think that would have gotten wonky. So there's a lot of people that want to do that. That would have given them, I think this cycle, very likely all six congressional seats in Kentucky. Now, here's the problem. And this is where the other school of thought is to just leave the third in Louisville and sort of what I would call intact, right? When you do that, you are creating potentially two swing districts that maybe in 2022 would be favorable to Republicans because of a national climate or whatever. I mean, look, I'm one of those people that says the election's a lifetime away. Anything can happen. Mm-hmm. But they're trying to look at this and game this out themselves. And so if you do that, then if there's an election cycle that's bad for Republicans, they could lose two or three congressional districts in Kentucky instead of having more favorable districts. And so the other school of thought was, let's keep the third as it is, shore up the other five districts, which you saw them do, right? And so those districts are all, I think, I say they're all, they might not all be more Republican. I haven't actually run the numbers on all of them, but I think that they appear, when you look at the map, to be more solidified for the Republicans in those districts as it stands today. Again, these districts will be here for 10 years. And I think that there's some opportunity in some emerging Democratic areas for Democrats in these maps. But as they look at it for 2022, you try to keep the third blue, and then they'll try to keep what they've got. So I wasn't shocked because of that background, mm-hmm. But I was glad to see that they're leaving Louisville intact, and in part just because, look, this is our government. This is how we are represented in Washington. And I think to split the third, let's split Jefferson County into three or four districts. One of the arguments I heard for it was, if you split the third that way, it's very likely that Jefferson County wouldn't have a congressman living in the county.
Right.
Right. That's not right. I've never liked partisan redistricting. I've always been in favor of nonpartisan redistricting. And here's one of the reasons why I even look at the districts. I'm not saying that Democrats would control a majority of the districts if there was a nonpartisan redistricting commission, but one out of six is Democratic. Whatever you think the state is of the Democratic Party right now, I think more than one in six Kentuckians identify as a Democrat. And that is not accurate representation when you're talking about what's going on in Washington. So I'm glad they kept the third Democratic. I think we have a long way to go in terms of partisan redistricting, and I hope we can get that sorted out, whether it's through the courts or whether it's through passing something like the Voting Rights Act in Washington, which is extremely important to make sure that we have a more fair process to determine how, again, we are represented in our government.
So I've got two questions that might be considered tougher.
Sure.
One is, so you're running against Attica Scott, who has strong support among a lot of progressives and obviously among a lot of Black voters and so on and so forth. What have you done about reaching out to, say, the Black community in Louisville, and how has that gone with her in the race? Is it sort of polite, or have you gotten, you know, some strong support there? So what's that looking like?
I'm in the state Senate to represent everyone in our community. I'm running for Congress to represent everyone in our community, all parts of our community. And that means that I've been going into all parts of our community. I'm thrilled, first of all, to have the support of Metro Council President David James, State Senator Gerald Neal, the longest serving African-American lawmaker in the state's history, State Representative Pamela Stevenson, Councilwoman Paula McCraney, Councilwoman Keisha Dorsey, Minister Kevin Cosby, Minister Stephen Kelsey. I've been going to church. I've been knocking on doors. The last two weekends, I was knocking on doors in the Park Duval areas of Louisville and going door to door asking people for their support, because I believe you've got to do all of that. So I've been going to church. I've been going to workplaces. I've been going to people's doors. The response has been really favorable. You know, I've been working on issues for every part of Louisville and Kentucky for a long time now. You know, like, take, for instance, everything we all heard in 2020, that we need to do better. I turned that into action, right? Louisville has a historically Black college and university in Simmons College, but the students at Simmons College have been denied access to Kentucky tuition grant money because of Kentucky law. Mm. Last year, I changed that, built a coalition in Frankfort and changed that. So Simmons College students now have more affordable college, but we didn't stop there, right? Simmons College started as a teaching college, but because of another quirk in the law, they've been denied an accredited teaching program, even though they have a national accreditation for being a teaching college. They weren't able to get it in Kentucky. So I changed the law so that Simmons College can now apply to have its teaching program back. 3% of college graduates nationwide are from HBCUs. 50% of Black teachers are from HBCUs. So we changed the law. I also created a portal between Simmons College and Kentucky State University, our other historically Black college and university, to make sure that the kids at these schools have access to all the programs and all the learning. So that, you know, HBCUs, you can't just go out and get an HBCU right now. An HBCU has to be in place before 1964, I think, under federal law. We have a real advantage in Kentucky that we've got two of them. There's a lot of major cities that don't have an HBCU. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, these are issues that I've been working on for a long time. I've had success working on them. I've got success working with the elected leaders in that community. And we'll continue to build what I think is a strong coalition to represent all of Louisville.
Okay. My other question is about your methodology of serving, is the best way I know how to put it. You are known as a pragmatic, relatively bipartisan legislator who works to find common ground whenever possible. You are not a flamethrower. You are not necessarily seen as very progressive, although I think that may be a misreading. So how do you appeal to the people who want to see a very progressive, no shame about it, no holds barred candidate and congressperson?
Well, first of all, I've always stood up for our values. I've always stood up for my values. I've always stood up for our values. I mean, when John Yarmuth endorsed me, he said that I will make a good, effective, progressive champion for the district. And that's what I've done. I've also done it while recognizing the realities of Frankfort, that I serve in a super minority, and that we do still have to make things happen back here, whether it's, again, passing the laws that benefit students at HBCUs, whether it's getting things in the budget, whether it's several of the bills I've been able to pass, preserving marriage equality in Kentucky. I passed a bill in 2016 preserving marriage equality, passed a bill to help victims of human trafficking, passed the bill to help with affordable housing that we've talked about. is making progress. And you said a word that I think means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, and that's bipartisanship. Bipartisanship to me doesn't mean to agree. Bipartisanship means the willingness to go do the hard work and at least listen. Right. And so, you know, two of the most important phrases I've learned in Frankfurt are, I don't know, and what do you think? Right. And by at least hearing what someone else thinks, it doesn't mean I agree with them. But when you have that discussion, you can make some progress. Doesn't mean I'm giving up the fight. Quite the opposite. I mean, I've fought for teachers' pensions. I've fought when Governor Bevin tried to, you know, dismantle much of the Affordable Care Act in Kentucky, something I firmly believe everybody's got to have access to quality, affordable health care. In fact, I was elected minority leader of the state Senate when Bevin was governor to in part fight the Bevin agenda in Frankfurt. So I think I have a really strong track record of standing up on everything from reproductive rights to climate change to healthcare to education in Frankfurt. And I think I also have a good reputation of being a proven and effective leader. And when we go back to something we talked about a second ago, Democrats get one voice in Washington. Mm-hmm. That voice needs to be someone with a proven and effective track record of being able to get things done for this district.
So I'm going to take a point of personal privilege and share a story quickly. And then I've got two final questions and we'll be done. One of my heroes is Teddy Kennedy. And one of the reasons he's one of my heroes is a story that was told after he died. They interviewed a Republican who had served with him. And they asked the Republican why he admired Teddy Kennedy so much, considering they were in opposite parties. And the Republican said something I've never forgotten. He said, look, Teddy Kennedy was the liberal lion because he was the liberal lion. We all knew where he stood. There wasn't any doubt about that. But he would walk into a committee room and he would sit down and say, okay, what can we get done? Mm-hmm. And he passed more legislation by coming in and saying that than anybody else. That to me has always been the mark of a really effective legislator. You know, combination, well, like you were saying, combination of I'm the liberal lion, but what can we get done?
When I started in the legislature, Bruce, my very first day, I walked in with David Haupt as my volunteer chief of staff. There is no one in Frankfurt who doubted where I stood on the issues.
Yeah.
I appreciate you sharing. I hadn't heard that story about Senator Kennedy, and that's a great story that I won't forget either.
So my next to last question is there anything that I haven't asked you that you wish I had, or is there anything that you wanted to bring up that I haven't brought up?
No, you always do a great job of this. And I'm so glad that we are doing this, because honestly, the Frankfurt Press Corps is depleted. Right. You know, and that's not a statement of the people who are currently covering it. It's just there are fewer and fewer reporters being dedicated to Frankfurt. And of course, you know, the CJ shut down its Washington bureau, I think ages and ages ago. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate you doing this and, you know, giving people a way to understand what's going on and who's running for these really important offices that do really important things. You know, tonight's the Super Bowl. As we sit here today, we talk tonight's the Super Bowl, and I fully plan to watch part of the game with the kids and critique the commercials. And, you know, I hope the chili is in the crock pot already, but I'll find out soon, right? You know, and we'll have a good time. But at the end of the day, it's just a game. And what happens in Frankfurt, what happens in Washington, what happens in your city council impacts people's daily lives. And I wish it got the coverage that something like the Super Bowl got.
So my last question is the one that I ask every candidate every time I interview one, which is, let's imagine that you are knocking on doors. Mm-hmm. And you are standing on my porch and I have opened the door and I say to you, why should I vote for you? What's your answer?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I've been knocking on doors a lot recently. So the first thing I would say is thank you for opening the door.
Yes.
You know what I've noticed, because I've knocked doors in every election, the big thing in door knocking right now are those Ring doorbells. they can see you. And if I'm almost like, if they have a Ring doorbell, I think there's a 15% chance they'll come to the door. But if you came to the door and asked me why, I think we would talk about what we've talked about today, which is, you know, I am a person of principle. I'm a person who stands up and fights for what I believe is right, but I will do it while trying to build coalitions to get big things done. I think we are at an inflection point right now, both in our city and our country. Look at our city. Our mayor's retiring. Our congressman's retiring. A third of our metro council's retiring. The president of the university has left. It's a moment of change. And in the national government, we are seeing what is possible, what government can do. We are able to make sure that every Kentuckian and every American has access to high-speed internet, to put every child in affordable childcare or public preschool to prepare them for lifelong learning, to tackle the threat of climate change. We know that we can solve these problems. Look, this is the government that within 9 months helped distribute a vaccine. We've seen the big things we can do. And I think it's a moment to send people to your government, local, state, and federal level, who are committed to our values and getting those big things done. I have a record of doing that. I'll continue to do that in Washington.
Senator Morgan McGarvey, running for Congress in the 3rd District. Thank you so much for your time, and good luck.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
That was State Senator Morgan McGarvey, who is running for Congress from Kentucky's 3rd District. I want to thank Senator McGarvey for taking time out of his campaign schedule, which combined with the legislative schedule is just crazy busy, as I'm sure it is for Representative Scott as well. I thank him for taking the time, and I really appreciate his openness about the questions I asked. And I was impressed with a lot of the answers he gave and a lot of the things he shared. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next podcast.